Okay, so in setting our motivation, of course we want to have the motivation of kindness and compassion towards living beings. And even if we feel that in our heart, we have to be careful of how it comes out, how we express it verbally and physically. And sometimes we don't have so much the intention of kindness and compassion. We may be angry or upset or fearful. And so our meditation, our motivation goes to one of defensiveness and so on. But still then we have to be very aware of how we express whatever we're feeling in words and in actions. And so that's the purpose of our precepts, our pratimoksha precepts, because they regulate verbal and physical activities. So sometimes in the with the idea of being transparent or honest, we may say things that sound threatening to other people, because at that very moment, maybe we're angry or we're upset or we feel like we want to slug someone. And so we say something like that. And other people may interpret that as threats. So this happens a lot. You know, in domestic violence cases, often somebody makes a threat because they're angry. They may not see it as making a threat. They may see it as just being angry and saying what's on their mind. But it makes the other person fearful. And then the other person seeks a, what do you call it? You know, were they an order? A restraining order, thank you. A restraining order where they forbid the other person from having contact with the person who feels threatened. So we have to be careful in these kinds of situations, because we may say something and not really realize how somebody else is taking it. So the example of domestic disputes is one example, but this can happen in the workplace. It can happen, you know, in all sorts of situations with others. So even though at the moment we may feel angry, we need to get in touch with our underlying wish to be a compassionate person. And even though we may not feel especially compassionate at that moment, to at least realize that that's the direction we want to go in. We don't want to go in the direction of assaulting someone. And so by getting in touch with that feeling of care and concern for others, that is kind of one of our basic values, then using that to consider how our speech is coming across to somebody else, and then just checking if we're expressing ourselves properly. So this is just something to think about in all of our interactions with other sentient beings. Because our words and our deeds and even our mental states affect other living beings. And they affect ourselves. And so let's try now to generate a compassionate attitude towards others, really seeing that they want to be happy and be free of suffering exactly like us. And so I think in some way wishing others happiness and wishing ourselves happiness come together. Wishing others to be free of suffering, wishing ourselves to be free of suffering, those things come together. I think in some ways it's difficult to have one without having the other if our wishes for happiness and freedom of suffering are actually sincere. Let's try and cultivate a sincere wish for ourselves and for other living beings. And then listen to the teachings with that kind of motivation. So I'm not sure if I explained what I was trying to get across properly. People get something from that. I was thinking of also, I mean, just how often our speech really has unintended consequences if we're not careful. I think I told you many times when I was a child, my mother would get so angry that she would say, you know, I want to kill you. And I knew she wouldn't kill me. I knew she loved me. I knew she wouldn't kill me. It was like, okay, Mom's really mad. I better like go in the other direction because I don't really want to be the recipient of more of this. But I knew she wasn't going to harm me. But if I had been a different kind of child, I could have, when my mother was angry and said, you know, I could have killed you, I might have gotten really frightened, you know, and held that fear for a long time and really, you know, become distrustful of other people, especially distrustful of my mother. And you told the story of when you were little and it was your mother who said it, huh? That she was going to put you in the garbage dump next door and let the garbage man come and take you away. And you thought she was serious. Yeah? So sometimes, you know, we may be angry and we may say something, and at that moment we're angry, so we say whatever, but it has an effect on somebody else. And other people may say, well, you know, they're just angry. There's nothing to it. I don't need to worry about it. But other people who may misunderstand it and say, I'm really afraid. Yeah? And so for that reason, we need to be really quite careful of the things we say so that they don't get misunderstood by other people, because then it winds up becoming a real barrier between us and the other person. And so we may think, you know, oh, I'm being honest, and so I'm just putting it out there. This came up in a discussion when I was in Portland last weekend. You know, one person was saying, you know, I just want to tell the truth, and because I told them my Aunt Ethel story, you know, and he said, I just want to say, no, Aunt Ethel, I can't stand this food. And I think that's the most truthful thing, because if I don't say it, she's going to continue to make food I don't like. So I should just say, Aunt Ethel, I can't stand this food. And I said, well, okay, that's your freedom. Sometimes, you know, you can't push people too much. But I said, you know, try and think about, you know, what her question really is. Try and think about the effect it's going to have on her if you say, I can't stand the food after she just cooked it for you. And her real question is, you know, I love you. Do you understand that? Okay. And so to think, you know, how somebody, what does telling the truth mean? You know, if you're really angry, do you just say to somebody, you know, I feel like killing you, like my mom used to say? Yeah? Now, if you said that out in public, some people could take that as a death threat. Couldn't they? You know, because we have all sorts of people giving all sorts of death threats over social media nowadays, and somebody could totally misunderstand it. Yeah? So we, you know, of course we want to be transparent, you know, especially we're living here in a community where we're all trying to help each other grow in the right direction. But we also, you know, have to be sensitive and you know, think about how our words could be understood by somebody else. Yeah? On the other hand, there's also the thing that sometimes some people are very sensitive. And I know, for example, that I get sarcastic, you know, because that's sometimes my way of saying, chill out, this isn't such a big deal, is to make a sarcastic comment that exaggerates the situation. Yeah, because that's kind of my sense of humor. But I realize that some people, when I speak like that, feel like they're not being heard at all. Like I'm just shining them on or dismissing them or something. Yeah. So on one hand, there's the speaker's responsibility to think of how my words can be heard. On the other hand, it's the listener's responsibility to think, am I correctly perceiving this? You know, is this actually a death threat? You know, I knew my mother was, you know, wasn't going to kill me. They said they wanted to, when they get really mad at both my brother and me, it was like, we want to knock your heads together. They actually did that one time. Yeah, but the rest of the time I kind of knew, you know, that's not going to happen. But, you know, I definitely got the message to stay away. And I stayed away and I shut up and I backed off. But I, you know, but one time they actually did that. Huh? Yeah, knocking your heads together? Yeah. Huh? Oh, that was his Three Stooges, I see. Okay, well, yeah, anyway, so, you know, so there's two things here, you know, one side on ours to be careful how we say something, the other side when we hear things, to actually say to ourselves, you know, is somebody dismissing me? Or what is the real thing that this person is saying? Is this actually a threat? Or is it just somebody trying to say I'm angry and using those kind of words? Okay, so it's everybody's kind of responsibility to try and make our communication accurate and so that it's understood. Knowing that it's kind of miraculous when we human beings ever understand each other. Yeah, when you think about it, you know, all these people with afflicted minds, how do we ever understand each other? It's really quite miraculous sometimes. Yeah? So we were in the middle of eliminating obstacles to the far-reaching practice of fortitude. So I think we did 17 and 18, right? Okay, so we're on 19. Refusing to accept the apologies of others. Okay? So what this means is that we are not giving up our anger towards somebody else. Okay? Somebody else comes and apologizes. We are still angry at them. And so we may either say no or show a lot of emotion and turn away from them, or we may just kind of ignore them or just, oh yeah, you know, kind of, oh yeah. So So that is our problem of hanging on to grudges, because hanging on to grudges is, you know, we just build up a lot of anger. So if there's something that happened between us and somebody else, somebody comes and apologizes, we're still angry. Instead of refusing their apology, we need to say, can we discuss the situation, because I'm still not at peace about it. You said you were sorry. I don't understand exactly what you're sorry about. And also, there was something that happened, and I would like a chance to express for my side of what happened and somehow clear up the misunderstanding. Okay? So instead of just looking away or going, or, you know, even flat out directly refusing it, we should be courageous, and if we're still holding on to something, say it and tell the person that we need to work it out, that we want to work it out. Okay? Because if we just ignore it and are still angry, we commit a downfall. Yeah, so we don't really want to commit any downfalls of our auxiliary bodhisattva precepts. Okay. On the other hand, sometimes it may happen that we apologize to somebody and the other person ignores us, or they look away, or they make some nasty remark in return. And if that happens, we just have to, you know, say, okay, and be good about it. We've done our share. We've made peace with it in our own mind. We've expressed the situation to somebody else that, you know, we have regret. And there's nothing more we can do to change somebody else's mind if they don't want to talk about it. Okay. On the other hand, if the other person says, you know, I still feel something about it and I think there's something we need to work out, then we should be receptive to that person and say, yes, let's talk about it and work it out, so that the situation actually gets resolved. Yeah? Because if we don't resolve situations, either in our mind or with the other person, then these things drag out and they become, we build up more of a story about them. They get exaggerated, our mind gets very tight and hard, and that's not at all helpful for our own Dharma practice, is it? You know, because if you're tight and angry and holding a grudge against somebody, how are you going to meditate on love and compassion? Yeah? that isn't going to work, because you can't have anger and compassion in your mind at the same moment. Yeah? So even for your own sake, you need to work these things out. Okay? But like I said, sometimes somebody isn't ready to forgive. We just have to back off, give them space, let them work it out, and hope in the future that it can work out. Yeah? But when somebody does come and apologize, it is good if we say, thank you, you know, for that, or, you know, we make some kind of gesture so that the other person knows that we are also letting go of the situation. You know, that we are also not being angry. Okay? Now, in terms of apologizing, I was reading one of Marshall's books the other day. And he says in NVC you don't apologize, because apologizing is coming from moralistic judgment and the idea that you have to make yourself low and that you have to punish yourself and suffer in order to atone for what you did wrong. So he says, in NVC, we don't make apologies, you know, because we don't have moralistic judgments. We just say something to the effect of, you know, when I spoke harshly to you in that way, or when I said da 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 da, yeah, I didn't fulfill my own need to communicate with you in a friendly way. He said, that's how you said, you don't say you're sorry, you say, I didn't fulfill my own need to communicate, or I didn't fulfill my own need to respect other living beings, or whatever it is that you yourself feel that you didn't live up to your own value or your own way that you would like to be in the world. Okay? Now, my idea about what he said, part of it I agree with, part of it I don't agree with. Okay? The part I agree with is that I think it's very helpful to realize that when we say or do something that is harmful, that we regret, to get in touch with that part of ourselves that does want to be a kind person and does want to have good relationships with others and does want to have integrity, and realize that we weren't living up to our own values when we said or did that. That part of it, I think, is very, very helpful, because when we understand that, then we don't get into self-blame of, I'm such a horrible person, they'll never forgive me, how could I have done that, I'm really wicked, and da-da-da-da-da, and therefore I should feel as guilty as possible, and somehow the worse I make myself feel, the more I'm atoning for what I did. Okay? So that whole psychological dynamic, I think, is rubbish, and it really impedes our practice. So I think saying, you know, I didn't fulfill my own needs to treat people the way I would like to be able to treat them. Yeah? And that if you say that to yourself, it keeps you from going into all that negative self-talk. Okay? The part I disagree with is I don't think that apologies necessarily smack of moralistic judgment. Yeah? And I think that apologies can be useful when they are sincerely made, and when we are specific about what it is we feel sorry for having said or done. Okay? When people come to me or write me an email and say, I'm sorry about what happened Friday night, I have no idea what they're talking about. Because whenever you have something happen between you and another person, there's many things going on, and people say many things. So are they sorry about this? Are they sorry they said that? Are they sorry? What are they sorry about? Okay, you getting what I'm saying? So we have to be very clear when we apologize, you know, what are we sorry about? You know, and I think that saying we are sorry acknowledges to the other person that we understand that what we did was hurtful to them. Okay? The part of saying I didn't fulfill my own need to respect other people or to communicate well or to help other people feel safe, that is helping ourselves. But I think to help the other person, it's good to acknowledge, gee, what I said caused you pain. Yeah? And then to follow upon that, I didn't fulfill my own need to be a trustworthy person that other people can feel safe around. Yeah? You getting what I'm saying? Yeah? Because we didn't fulfill our own need to be a trustworthy person that other people can feel safe around. Because I think we all want other people to trust us, and we all want people to feel safe around us. We don't want people to look at us and like walk the other direction because they're afraid we're going to clobber them, you know, or we're afraid that they're going to, you know, just put a, you know, a barrel full of their vindictive speech on us, okay? So, you know, we see how we disappointed ourselves, but we also recognize to the other person that what I said was painful. And I think that's good to recognize that. And being monastics, we have to purify. So we can't, you know, Marshall seems to think that saying, you know, something is virtuous or more or non-virtuous is moralistic judgment. As a Buddhist practitioner, we have to be able to discern what is virtuous and what isn't. And to say, I committed non-virtue. And I confess that, and I repent it, because repent means not only we confess it, but we make amends. Yeah? So that's the part that I don't agree with the NVC. Because I think as Buddhist practitioners, definitely, we have to be able to say it's non-virtue. But to say it's non-virtue without, I'm such a bad person. How could I have done that? Everybody hates me. I've disappointed the whole community. Now they know what a lousy practitioner I am. Are they going to kick me out? You know, without all that kind of rubbish. Okay? Communicating? Yeah?
The part where we're saying we're sorry for that specific thing, it also demonstrates to them that we care.
Yes.
We care about the relationship and how they are.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we're acknowledging that we hurt them. That indicates we care, yeah, about them and the relationship.
I would say that differently. I would say we acknowledge that they feel hurt.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I acknowledge that I caused their hurt. I think that's hard because I have to separate the two. I'm responsible for my behavior.
Right.
They're responsible for their reactions. If
right.
I do misdeeds, some people are not going to be hurt by it.
Right.
And some people are. So I find it better in this. I like the part of that system that doesn't make me take responsibility for their reactions.
Right.
But I think I agree 99% with what you're saying. But I wouldn't use some of the words of like caused. I caused their pain or whatever it is, because mm-hmm. that's their side. Their
but you could say, I realize that this, you know, this situation was painful for you.
Yeah, I would say it that way. I think it acknowledges to them that you're showing kind of empathy.
Yeah.
But I'm not taking responsibility for their reaction.
Right, you don't want to take responsibility for their emotion, but you do want to link their emotion with our unskillful words.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
If we don't make that link, then we're kind of saying, you know, I can say whatever
right.
I want to and I'm not responsible
right.
for it.
Yeah, and that's
you
not,
know?
Yeah, I
so
agree.
We need I think it's okay to say, you know, I realize that my words were painful for you to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah? Or I realize I spoke unskillfully. And I wouldn't feel bad about saying, and my unskillful speech caused you pain. Yeah, I can say that. I'm not actually feeling responsible for there. But I have to own that my speech influenced them. Yeah? Okay. So I'm not reveling on the ground. Oh, I'm so sorry. You're suffering and it's all my fault. But I think it's fair to say that there is a link between my unskillful speech and somebody else's hurt feelings. Yeah? But when I do that, that doesn't mean I'm responsible for their feelings because I don't have to try and, you know, I don't have to be a people pleaser and fall all over them and make them feel better. And go, oh, I'm so sorry. Your feelings were hurt. I'm so sorry. This is terrible. Do you forgive me? That isn't necessary. Yeah?
Can you use the word
condition, that my speech was a condition for your pain? Okay, how would you feel if somebody said that to you?
I wouldn't say it.
No.
I wouldn't say it that way.
Okay, how...
Think of it.
Okay, how would you want... Let's say somebody said something that was very hurtful to you.
Right.
How could they say it to you without using the word sorry and without using the word cause? Where you would feel that your pain was being acknowledged.
There's many ways. I mean, it's, you know, I don't see that's hard to do at all.
Can you give me an example
of
how you
would
say it?
The other person is trying to apologize to me. What would they have to say?
No, let's say okay. You said something. You said, you know, children, you're such an idiot, you know. I just was, you know, you, again and again, you just act in this really rude, sarcastic way, and I just can't take it anymore, and I'm really fed up.
And then I'm coming to you to apologize without
right.
saying sorry, apologize, or cause.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would say, you know, when I said those words, I would acknowledge, like, I was out of control, and I was feeling this, and I understand that this has an impact on you. And this I regret, and I don't know what you're feeling. Maybe you'd like to express to me what your response was to that. I'm part of this, you know. This,
yeah.
I acknowledge that this could have really upset you.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say I caused your upsetness.
Okay.
I just can't say that.
Okay. But
I can say I'm sorry. I don't have any problems with that word. I feel like the way he's presenting that has got this geo-Christian kind of attitude that Buddhism has helped me to separate from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When you say, my behavior impacted you, that also means my behavior impacted, it caused.
Well,
you're not using the word cause, but...
Yeah,
I wouldn't
use the word cause.
You wouldn't use
the
word cause,
direct.
But the meaning is...
In my mind, the meaning is not cause. Because to me, with my understanding of Buddhism, they have their own causation.
Right.
I'm just a condition.
Okay.
A trigger is the word that they use in NBC. I don't like that word so much. I realize that my behavior impacts others.
Yeah.
But I'm not the cause of their emotions.
Okay. Okay, that's fine.
I'm the condition. But I wouldn't say that.
You're the condition.
I wouldn't say that because
I'm sorry I was the condition for...
Well, I wouldn't say that because it wouldn't be skillful.
Yeah.
But that's how I think of it.
Yeah. Why wouldn't that be skillful? I mean, if you're with a bunch of Dharma practitioners?
Well, it might in that situation, but when a person's upset, I just don't think it would work. Like,
mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm just the condition.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I don't like the word trigger.
Yeah, you
know?
See what I mean? That's like saying, okay, you're hurt, but, you know, don't blame me. I don't have any responsibility.
You can use the word trigger that way, too. It's kind of like, in some ways, if your motivation is to distance yourself in any way from your responsibility in this interaction, then that's not going to work.
Right. Right. So let's not use language to do that. And let's not use the thought process of, well, you know, that's just their problem.
Right. And this is where I think, for me, the whole thing with NVC comes down to motivation. I don't care if people don't get the words right. I really don't care. You can tell where somebody's coming from to a degree. You know, we're all deluded and we're misreading others. But there's some level of conventional truth that we have some contact with sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have a sense. Or if you don't know and you aren't clear, you have to ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with Venerable Tarpa in terms of making really, because it's important for me and my own people-pleasing behavior to really understand that I'm not responsible for the other person's feeling. Because I'm quite willing to take it habitually. And that's, you know, it's been a huge shift not to. So to be careful that I don't say it in a way that says, I hurt you, is important.
Right.
Okay, and so to say I caused you pain is the same thing in my mind. But but also, I need to be careful not to assume that hurt is what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that example was good. You know, I see that my unskillfulness, which I really regret, had an impact, and I would like to talk about it or whatever, but mm-hmm. not to go say I'm really sorry I hurt you, because I don't know that. I'm just assuming that, and I'm taking responsibility for it when I use those words.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, because sometimes I can. I can see that my words hurt somebody, and I'm okay with saying, you know, my words were painful.
They caused something.
Yeah, they caused something. You know, they caused pain. That doesn't bother me, because I know in my mind I'm not accepting responsibility for it.
I hear you. And I also have found through living here that it's actually been more helpful for me not to assume what the other person is experiencing.
Uh-huh.
Because I have the usual, favorite ways that my mind goes isn't necessarily how other people's goes. And
yeah.
I've really found it more helpful to, I guess I do like the word impact, and then explore what is that?
Yeah. My words impacted you in a disturbing way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Is that assuming too much that they're disturbed? Do you not want to make that? My words impacted you?
I don't really have any problem if you said your words hurt me or this and that. But I might want to have enough space, because it has happened sometimes where people are assuming what I'm feeling. And I find that to be quite annoying.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't have any, I'm not a part of the conversation then. They've already been the judge, the jury, and everything. They've hung themselves. They've, you know, they've said what I'm feeling, what my reaction is. Uh-huh. They know everything, and they haven't asked me a thing.
Uh-huh. Right, so I'm still not in the conversation.
Yeah, so you're still not a part of it. Uh-huh. So that, you know, I've been on both ends of that.
My words impacted you adversely.
Yeah, that works. I mean, you could tell me that your words were hurtful, but the main thing is the mindset of the person. Are you really wanting to listen and understand this person? Mm-hmm. Or are you just putting your little drama on them now when you're making this apology? You know,
right.
There's really a difference.
Right.
Even no matter what the words are, I don't care so much about the words. It's really what is happening there. Is the person really interested to know what you as another human being are experiencing? And that's, you can tell no matter what the words are.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we're not going to get hung up on the words? Although you might still. Yeah. No, but it's true. And certainly this kind of flippant, I'm sorry where you aren't sorry, is useless. And like I said at the beginning, just saying I'm sorry about what happened doesn't give anybody any useful information at all. Yeah.
With thinking about needs and feelings, it seems like Marshall's approach deals with, like, he's dealing with his feelings and what an mm-hmm. apology and his needs. And what an apology does is acknowledge that the other person has feelings and needs.
Yeah.
And
that's what
and
I think.
It's a simple thing in a lot of ways. I was a little kid, you know, they say sorry is an easy thing to say, but it's so hard for some people to say. You could also ask the person, you know, or say it in a way that it seems like my words hurt you and I regret that,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, you know, depending on the situation. Some people you knew, you could say, did what I say hurt you? And they might blow up at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, you know, so it depends on the situation.
Yeah.
But I think of what's missing with what Marshall's got going on is that yeah, as bodhisattvas, a bodhisattva wants to not put themselves as the main center of things, and that's what that's doing, it seems like, to
what,
me.
What is what's doing?
Just saying, I didn't meet my needs for this and that. It's my. What about, I'm sorry that what I did interfered with your needs and your feelings.
Yes, exactly. That was my point. Yeah, that just saying I didn't meet my needs doesn't acknowledge the other person has feelings and needs. Yeah. And it doesn't acknowledge non-virtue. And we have to be able to acknowledge that, I think, but without beating ourselves up.
quite a few comments online. One person saying, doesn't apologizing also provide the opportunity for the recipient to practice generosity by accepting that mm-hmm. apology?
Sure. That's why I was saying when somebody apologizes, you show that you accept it if you accept it. And if you don't accept it, you say, you know, I'm still feeling turbulent and I need to talk with you about it.
And then someone else said, and doesn't it also provide us an opportunity to be humble and admit that we're not perfect? I like to apologize because it's good for my mind.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then another person was kind of tying in very much with what we were just saying of, shouldn't we phrase the apology based on what will most ease the turbulence in the other person's mind? Because isn't it more about them than about us?
Mm. Is the apology more about them than about us? That I'm not sure about, because to apologize, it's a great deal about us in the sense that we have to admit that we had a negative intention and wanted to cause harm, and that our physical verbal actions were unskillful. And an apology is acknowledging that in the presence of the other person, you know, which in NVC you could say it didn't meet my needs, or, you know, however you want to say it, yeah. I think the role of apology does, in many situations, one of the purposes may be to ease the pain of the other person. But we can't assume that our apologizing or our acknowledging our own responsibility or all our acknowledging that we didn't fulfill our own needs for how we would like to act, we can't assume that the other person, all their anger goes because of that. Yeah? So we have to be able to make an apology. Or to own, another way of saying that, to own our part of the thing, whether the other person forgives us or not. Because their forgiveness, their letting go of it, that is their part of it. We cannot coerce them into doing that. Okay? So it's important that we apologize whether or not other people accept, because it's important for us to be at peace in our own minds and confess and make amends for our bad behavior, okay? But the apology isn't only for the other person, because we cannot control their response. And so if they choose to stay angry, or maybe they don't want to even see us, and we don't have the opportunity to give them the apology, you know, face to face, maybe we have to write them a letter, or maybe they tear the letter up, or whatever it is. Yeah, that part we can't control. Our job is to work with our own mind and express our sense of regret. Yeah, so that we have to be very clear about. But I think it's also, we shouldn't go into, well, the apology's only for me, because the other person does have feelings and needs. And we need to say, you know, my speech impacted you in a harmful way. Or, you know, to acknowledge that the other person has feelings. But to not take responsibility for their feelings. Yeah? Making some sense, people getting this? Yeah. Yeah, but.
No, but.
Okay. Venerable Jukme?
I was just thinking when you were talking that so much of this has a whole lot to do with forgiveness.
Yeah.
On many levels.
Yeah.
And that really is the, what do you call that? The healing. That's the healing part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the forgiveness is the healing. And the forgiveness is the letting go of the anger. So apologizing and forgiving they're close. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's good if we do both. Yeah.
Okay. It's going back to number 18 about neglecting those who are angry with you by not trying to pacify their anger. But also, also realizing that sometimes it's also true that people get angry and our intention was really not to hurt at all.
Yep.
And still to be able to acknowledge that without taking responsibility for it is an important part of both of these things.
Yeah. You know, to let the other person know my intention. You may have understood my words to mean da 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 da, but my intention was something else. It was d, and I wasn't so skillful in expressing what I said. Yeah? Even if you think the other person was totally misunderstood because they're way out in la la land, it's better to say, I didn't express myself properly.
Offering the victory
to them, exactly. Yeah, offering the victory to them. Yeah, I don't have to have the last word. I don't, you know, I can, whether it's true that my words were unskillful or not, I can take responsibility that they may have been. And that eases the other person's mind. Whereas if I really want to run a court of law here, and say, well, I'm sorry that, you know, that you misunderstood what I said. Yeah, because it was, you know, I was saying this, and you understood something else, implication because you're a dimwit. Yeah, that is not so helpful, okay?
I agree with what you said. And on top of that, Marshall's method works for me in something similar to what Mirabel Jigme was saying, that what it does is it opens up the, by saying what, you know, I didn't meet my need for all these things, may I say those things, that it gives the other person, I'm giving the other person a view of my inner state of mind. To open up that connection again, to repair that connection. Mm-hmm. So that works for me. That it's not an easy thing to be able to know what's happening when you are saying all those things. And it can be very embarrassing to tell the person what is your state of mind and what you are feeling and needing. Because a lot of time the needs are really embarrassing. And you have the guts to let them know and be vulnerable about it.
Yeah.
That is a healing, a way of healing.
Yeah.
And it works for me. I don't think it just, you know, the other person is out of the picture because you are attempting to open up communication.
Yeah.
And you need the other person to accept your invitation to connect again.
Yeah, you want the other person to accept your invitation to connect, but it's very helpful to them, to help them accept your invitation if you acknowledge that your words or deeds had an impact on them that was unpleasant for them. Yeah, to be able to say that part.
I think we all know that sometimes it can be very hard to apologize. Very difficult, especially when we're wondering about what the response we might get is. And so one of the things that we're giving somebody when we accept their apology is we're making it easier for them to learn to do that, to look, to accept, to be able to apologize in the future and look at their own thing. And perhaps even through an example, making it easier for them to learn to accept other people's apologies by seeing behavior.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very good when somebody, you know, apologizes to be able
to accept it.
To accept it and not begrudgingly, but kindly so that, you know.
Right.
And think that, you know, it may have been hard for this person to come up and say this, you know. As Xiao Yin says, it's hard to express what's going on with you. I wonder, though, about, like, if somebody apologizes and you don't feel like they really are sorry, you may let go of your anger, but what do you do about that? Do you really accept their apology, or is that in the exceptions here?
Okay. So, yeah, I agree that the apology is, like she said, accepting the person who's apologizing is making themselves vulnerable, or the person who's saying, I didn't fulfill my own need. They're making themselves vulnerable and accepting what they're saying and having a good response to that is accepting their invitation, you know, to reconnect and accepting, yes, I realize that you're being quite open and vulnerable, and thank you. You know, it's a way of saying that. Now, if you think somebody's making a fake apology, there are some exceptions. Okay. So let's hear the exceptions. Okay, so there's no misdeed if it is better for the person's spiritual development that we do not accept the apology. Now, in order to make that an exception, you have to be very wise, okay? Otherwise, we use that as a big justification to hold a grudge. Okay. Dharma weapon. Yeah. Then there's two more exceptions. They do not offer their apology properly according to custom. Okay? So that's the thing of somebody just saying, oh, I'm sorry, what happened? Yeah. Or just some kind of an offhanded something. So that's not offering the apology properly according to custom. Yeah. So I think in those situations, then you need to try and open up the conversation and say, I don't understand specifically what you're expressing regret about. Can you be more specific? Yeah? Or, you know, say something to open up the discussion to see, you know, to get the person to really, you know, be sincere. And if they just kind of say, oh, well, you don't get it, forget it, and walk away, then, you know, what can you do? Okay? So, and then the other exception, we have reason to believe that their apology is not sincere. Yeah? So again, I think it's important for us to let go of our anger, whether or not somebody apologizes or expresses their regret about not meeting their own needs. From our side, we need to let go of our anger regardless. Because if we spend our life waiting around for other people to apologize, we're going to spend our life being pretty miserable. Okay, so we need to work on our own grudge holding. Yeah, whether they apologize or not. Okay. If we feel that their apology is not being sincere, then, you know, try and open it up in some way and get them to think about the situation more.
An exception story that happened between us some years ago. I think I was writing an email to someone. You had asked me to write to someone, and I was getting you into a situation you didn't want to be involved in. This seems familiar. I won't go into the specifics. But you came in the door. I knew that you were ticked off from the reply that you sent me, like, you're getting us into a situation I don't want to be involved in. You came in the door, and first thing I did was stand up and go, sorry, 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 sorry. And you looked at me and said, what are you sorry for? It was really helpful because it helped me to pause and, you know, and I didn't know. I think I said to you, I don't know. I thought you were mad, so I just said sorry first. So it helped really on two levels, right? First of all, to pause, and it was a teaching point, right? Like, do you even know what is the problem?
Yeah.
That's one. It's like, oh, that's true, I don't. And two, it helped me catch this habit. Most of my life, I'll say sorry and run away and not deal with the problem. That's my way of appeasement. Sorry, sorry, bye-bye. And it doesn't actually help mend the relationship.
No.
And I have not grown So it really helped me to stand my ground, like, as in to be clear, yeah, what exactly am I sorry for?
Yeah. 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 And you've seen me do that here sometimes at the Abbey, when people will say sorry. I say, I don't understand what you're sorry about. Tell me. Yeah? Because they need to be clear about it, and I need to be clear, too.
I can think of situations where people have thought to demand an apology or require one from either me or someone else, and it's almost as though if that's not going to happen, then we're not going to make any headway, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So what would be the responsibility of someone on the receiving end of that?
Somebody's demanding an apology from you.
And it's almost as though you sense if you did apologize, they'd be better off. But then you're wondering, you know, you're not clear of what you're totally apologizing for.
Yeah. So that's the thing. You need to be clear. Yeah. Did I do something that requires an apology or not? You know, just because somebody's demanding one, you know. So we may look and say, oh, yeah, you know, I wasn't very careful about what I said, and I need to acknowledge that. What we need to understand, and what often prevents us from apologizing, is we're afraid that that means that the other person won, and that we are lower than them, and we are belittled. So we don't want to apologize out of pride, okay? So if we look and we feel, you know, I don't understand why that person clearly thinks I made a mistake. I don't recognize what that mistake is, and it seems they're demanding an apology, then you have to say exactly the truth. I'm sorry, I don't understand, you know, what the occasion was that, you know, caused that that you're having a reaction to. Please explain it to me. Yeah, because I'm in the dark. Yeah. Other times, somebody may be demanding an apology, and we may say, oh, yeah, I did make a mistake. Then we state what it is we regret or how we didn't fulfill our own needs. And that may satisfy the other person or it may not. And we can't control. If they're expecting the kind of apology where we are groveling on the ground, beating our chest, saying, I am so terrible, I ruined your whole life, you no wonder you hate me forever. If that would be lying to make that kind of apology, they would be totally insincere. If the other person is wanting that kind of thing, you know, we can't give that. We're willing to talk about what is true for us, but we can't, you know, apologize for things that we don't feel are our responsibility. Yeah? So, what to do? Yeah? What to do? It's hard, because some people are very sensitive, and even if you do apologize sincerely in a very nice way, they still hold onto it. What can you do? You know, are you going to sit there and grovel on the ground and, you know, do a big theatrical thing? Because that's not really going to satisfy them either. And similarly, if we're holding on to a grudge and we're expecting somebody else to grovel on the ground, and only then will we forgive the slob, then that is our problem and our arrogance. And we're going to be miserable for a long time if we're releasing our anger on somebody else groveling. Yeah. Oh. Like I said, it's amazing that we sentient beings ever communicate. Yeah? It's totally amazing. Shall we go on? Okay, that was just a one line. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words. Wow. Okay, the next one's even shorter. It's only 5 words. Okay, acting out thoughts of anger. Okay, so you're mad. You're ticked off. Yeah. You really want to let somebody know that they overstepped the line and you're not going to put up with this kind of stuff. And so you give it to them. Okay? So that's transgressing this precept. Yeah. We have a responsibility as practitioners, if we want to keep this precept, to try and apply an antidote to our anger. If we are keep on applying an antidote and we're really working at it, but the anger hasn't completely gone away, it's not a transgression because we're fulfilling our responsibility in applying the antidote and doing our best. And sometimes our anger is really strong and it's going to take a while to get over it. Okay? But this one is, you know, we're not applying an antidote, or we think, I'll apply the antidote later. Right now, I'm really ticked off. And they need to know right now that I'm not going to stand for this business. And later on, I'll apply the antidote. Okay? So that is a transgression. Yeah? So this one's very easy, isn't it, to transgress? Not applying an antidote for our anger. Yeah? We're angry. Yeah? So I find it's very helpful. First, we have to be able to identify our anger. So to learn to be sensitive to what does anger feel like in our body and what does anger feel like in our mind, so that we can even identify that we're angry and be able to say to ourselves, I'm angry. And so that takes some practice. Some of us never learned as kids how to identify our feelings. We never learned the words to put on certain feelings. So, you know, depending on our skillfulness at even identifying what we're feeling, it may take us a longer, shorter time. Yeah? So some people, it's helpful to tune into your body, because when you're angry, you know, the heart's pumping, the face is flush, there's a knot feeling in your stomach, there's tightness in your muscles. So that can tell you something. Also, if you're aware of the kind of flavor or mood of your mind, that can also let you know that, you know, some button got pushed. Yeah, like there's just a certain feeling in your mind, and it's like, I'm not comfortable. And it's like, okay, there's something happening here, and I'm mad. And then to say, okay, what was the situation that was the trigger? And then to say, you know, what was the situation that was the re-trigger? And then to say, why did I have to get angry in response to that situation? Not why did that make me mad, but why did I have to get angry? What was my button that got pushed? Because when we get angry, we have a button that got pushed. So what's the thing that I'm holding on to that I'm getting angry about? Because whenever we're angry, it's indicative of having attachment. Yeah? So to work on our anger, on our aversion, we have to also work on our attachment, because our buttons are the things we're attached to. Yeah? So what is my button? Why am I angry? I'm holding on to something here. Either I'm holding on to how I think people should treat me, or I'm holding on to, you know, what I think is proper behavior, or I'm holding on to who knows what we're holding on to. But what is it that I'm holding on to? And then to be able to say, you know, okay, I'm holding on to that, but does that mean I have to get angry? Yeah. What am I holding on to is NVC language for what is my need. Okay, I'm holding on to something. You don't think that that's... No? Why not?
My understanding, what I'm holding on to in MVC language is what are the jackal language that's going on in your mind, the thoughts that is fueling these feelings that's coming up.
Yeah.
So it's not the needs themselves.
Okay, but don't the jackal thoughts arise from unmet needs that we don't know how to express properly?
Yes, they do, but the part that you were saying about, you know, these, it's the thoughts that I'm believing in, those thoughts that's giving rise to the unmet need. Because I believe this person is a jerk, then, you know, my need for maybe safety or whatever is not being met. Because mm-hmm. I seriously believe this person is going to hurt me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But usually it's, I have unmet needs for safety, and for that reason I feel a person's a jerk.
I don't think the needs exist in like this kind of concrete way. It's like I have this thought that, okay, I'm in danger.
Mm-hmm.
So my need for safety is not being met right now.
Yeah.
Then I have all this reaction that comes.
Right.
But it's the thought that is fueling this.
It's the thought that...
Those thoughts.
Yeah.
Those thoughts right. that is fueling these... it's giving rise to these unmet needs.
Okay, I need to think about that a little bit. I'm not quite understanding it, so can we come back to that later? Because the way I look at it is, if I'm holding on to something, okay, there's something that I'm needing that's not getting met. I'm just explaining how I'm looking. I'm needing that's not getting met, and so I get angry about it. And the anger is the jackal language. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You may say this comes first, and I may say the other one comes first. But the point is, we're holding on. Isn't that the point? Yeah? We're holding on to something. Yeah? And so to say, what is it that I'm holding on to? And the reason I express it this way is because sometimes I think we hold on to our needs. And we have a thing inside, if I demand that my need be met, and it isn't getting met. Yeah? So I'm holding on to that. And sometimes to learn to release our needs. Yeah, I know that that's not and the NVC way that Marshall says all your needs are valid and acceptable. But I have a slightly different view on that from the viewpoint of a practitioner. Okay, we may or may not agree. But in any case, when we're angry, we're holding on to something. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So what is it that I'm holding on to?
Me.
Yeah. It's all based on me, isn't it? And it's based on, you know, I want, I need, things should be this way, things should not be that way. Okay. And so to stop and say, my whole configuration of how I'm understanding this, is that correct or not? Yeah. Am I demanding that my need be met? Is my need realistic? What is going on in my own mind? So you may or may not agree with what I've said, but just think about something, yeah, about a self-reflective thing of when you're angry to ask yourself, why am I angry?
So do you take the primary antidote to be letting go?
I don't think you can say, let. You can't sit there and say, let go, let go, let go. That doesn't make you let go. I think the result of applying the antidote is letting go. Okay? The result, but you have to apply the antidote and figure out, you know, find another way to look at the situation so that you're not so rigid in your mind.
So trying to discover wisdom in that moment is what allows you to let go.
What do you mean by wisdom?
Insight into what's actually happening, what's actually the case.
What do you mean, the external case or your internal
Both.
Case? The external case, who knows what, you know, I think it's helpful to try and see what has actually happened without all my interpretation on it, but to look at where's all my interpretation coming from. Yeah, because why am I so upset? Because I'm having some interpretation on this thing. Yeah. And so I have to see how my interpretation is erroneous.
And that's what I was trying to imply about wisdom.
Okay.
Recognizing the erroneousness.
Yeah. So if I can see how what, you know, my interpretation is erroneous and that there's another way to see the situation, then the anger just doesn't exist anymore. Yeah.
I want to kind of tie that to the needs thing again, is that mm-hmm. Even if we have a valid need, we may be attached to our strategy to meet it, which has mm-hmm. a lot to do with how we're interpreting stuff.
Yeah.
And so, because we do have, you know, certain needs that are, you know, conventionally valid.
Yeah. Yeah, valid on a conventional level, if you're accepting eye grasping, you know, if you're accepting that we are people who have grasping an inherent existence, then this need is valid. And then, yeah, our strategies for getting our need met is being frustrated. Yeah. So that could be another way to see it. Say, yeah, I have a strategy. Or I want an outcome, and what I want is not happening. Yeah, doesn't it boil down to that? Yeah, whether you call it strategy or whatever, it's like, I want something, and I'm not getting what I want. And so I'm ticked off.
I think one of the things that's helpful with this whole process is to have some acceptance of how my mind is thinking. And that happens way before I can figure out what I'm holding on to and then think about letting it go. So at least that's how my mind has been. So to figure out how to have some acceptance of what it is that's going on with me, what my mind is thinking.
What your mind's thinking or what you're feeling?
Okay, either.
Okay.
But without judgment, because mm-hmm. my hang-up for many years was that these things would come into my mind and I'd just wail on myself and then stay stuck in it and stay far away from ever moving anything. Mm-hmm. So this whole idea about accepting without judgment was mm-hmm. a first step for me before yeah. I could get to these other pieces.
Yeah, right. Sometimes when I give talks on anger, people will come up to me afterwards and say, you said we shouldn't get angry. And I said, are you sure? Check the tape. I don't think I said that. So I think what you're saying is this need to accept what you're feeling is fulfilling that part of it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this is what I'm feeling. And so I explain to people, I'm not saying you shouldn't get angry. If you're angry, you're angry. So you accept that you're angry, okay? The thing is, do you want to continue to be angry? That's the thing.
You will never get to that unless you can accept.
Yeah, unless you're able to say, I'm angry. And that's the thing of identifying what we're feeling. And I'm angry, you know. And we may even say, look, it's not so good I'm angry. You know, this is painful, I'm creating negative karma. I really don't want to stay in this. But this, I acknowledge that this is what I'm feeling. You know, you have to acknowledge it. And then say, do I want to continue being angry? If you want to continue being angry, go ahead. You know, just realizing that you're going to be miserable and you're transgressing this precept. Yeah, and creating a ton of negative karma. But if you realize, hey, I'm angry, and I recognize my anger is causing me pain, and it's causing me to say and do things that I really don't want to experience the results of, and it's making me hurt other people that I actually care about, then I need to apply some antidote to my anger so that you're not suppressing it, but the anger just is not arising. You know? So, for example, if somebody criticizes me, if I say to myself, this is the result of my own negative karma of criticizing others, you know, then that helps me accept the situation and I cease to be angry at the other person because, you know, why, you know, this is a result of my own self-centered mind and I'm experiencing that result, and if I don't like it, I better really be on guard against my self-centeredness. Yeah? Or, so I may do it that way, or I may do it as, you know, I really would like this person to acknowledge such and such, or I would like them to be this way, or I would like that, and they're not doing it. And in fact, they're acting the opposite way, and they're not being sensitive to my needs. And to be able to say, you know, you can't control the world. You know? Somebody's suffering, they're acting this way, you can't control the world. Yeah, you need to have some compassion for this person. And so that helps. Yeah, and then all the other ways in working with anger.
So in my own experience working with anger for me is a secondary emotion. Mm-hmm. And the feeling of the anger is actually an alarm system. Because when I look at the anger, like layer down, usually is being hurt. You're feeling hurt, you're feeling embarrassed, you know, all those yes. really tender, embarrassing kind of feelings.
Afraid.
Yes, afraid, fear, all these things, anxiety that is then expressing itself as anger because there is a habit and that is a way of protection
yeah.
because anger is powerful.
Yep.
Yeah, so when I can see that the actual feeling I have is those tender feelings,
yeah.
then the whole thing about the anger transforms.
Right.
So that's why MVC helps me, because when I can look at the anger mm-hmm. in the MVC language, usually I'm not feeling anger. The actual feeling is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's difficult to identify because yeah. it's embarrassing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very often, I mean, anger gives us an adrenaline rush, which makes us feel powerful. And we like that because underneath we're scared, we feel vulnerable. You know, like you said, we feel humiliated, we feel embarrassed, we feel hurt. So anger can mask all of that. Yeah, so it's very helpful to identify what is really going on in my mind. You know, what is the real issue? So that's what I'm saying. What is my button? Yeah, what is my button? my pride is wounded because somebody saw through my trip and commented on it. Yeah? So, you know, why am I angry? Yeah, somebody saw through my trip and commented on it. Yeah? Well, why is that bothering me? Yeah, I need to own my trip. And if I have a trip and somebody comments on it, why am I upset at them? It's my trip.
So it's not easy to get to what you're saying, like, you know, to get to that thought that, you know, my trip is, like, people are calling me out for something. To get to that thought, to that kind of honesty mm-hmm. is not easy, which for me, MVC helps because it gives the steps to get to there.
Mm.
That's why it's helpful, because Venerable Samke mentioned before that MVC is like a thought training.
Mm-hmm.
It actually flips the way I usually think,
mm-hmm.
by giving me access to that kind of
to
level.
That kind of thing. So in this kind of situation where somebody's calling you out and you're getting angry, how would you use NVC?
So when that happens and I have the presence of mind, the
mm-hmm.
First thing I do is, okay, which part of my body am I feeling right now? Where is that? So usually, it's interesting that it's actually what's helpful for me is, okay, so I immediately go to, okay, I'm anxious because I don't know what exactly I'm feeling. There's some anxiety. Is it here? Is it here? So once I do that, I immediately, that energy cuts by half because I'm no longer focused outside, I'm focused inside.
Mm.
Then the next step is, okay, it's really terribly uncomfortable, but it's okay. It's okay that it's uncomfortable, that this my chest is congested. And then once I get to that two, the third one is, okay, so what am I saying to myself that's causing this anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of enemy image am I projecting that is causing this thing to come out, this fear, this anxiety, whatever? So if I can have the presence of mind to do this three, the anger doesn't come up.
Yeah.
It just extinguishes like that.
Yeah.
So that's why MVC is helpful for me, because it gives me very specific steps to do.
I also had the problem of not being able to access all my feelings, and I learned that, but I didn't learn it through MVC. I learned it through actually proper meditation. Not. Mm. I also got in trouble with meditation too, because I could exit out a little bit, you know, like suppress things actually. But I learned a way to, one thing that helped me clearly in this was doing a meditation where I did just allowed myself to be aware. And when I got flooded with emotion, I went back to the breathing meditation. So I had a calmness of clarity of the mind went up. And so I learned it as a thing of, I could either express something or repress something, but there was a third choice of awareness. So I didn't learn that within, I learned in a completely different context, but it also gave me steps, and it helped me, and a lot of it was just making time for myself, actually, to turn within.
You know, to check in with yourself.
Yeah, to check in and not be so busy running around to know that I needed to do that and make the time and space to do that, and that was, you know, was a big part of it.
Yep. So we're all going to find different ways to do things, and whatever works for us. Yeah. And also what to have a variety of ways to deal with things. That I found that very helpful, you know, not just one technique, because there are different kinds of anger, different situations of anger. Knowing a variety of ways to handle it, I think, is quite helpful. Shall we dedicate? Interesting, these four precepts.